Welcome to the Freedom to Rise podcast, a production of United Way Suncoast. Here's your host, Bronwyn Batal.
At United Way Suncoast, we consistently talk about how the business community can support early learning initiatives, childcare providers, and young parents, which is a win for everyone. On this episode of the Freedom to Rise podcast, we're speaking to someone whose company models how businesses can step up to make a difference. And she's proven to be a tireless advocate for early learning and community building in her own right. Listen in, because while this company has made a huge financial commitment to early learning, we'll also learn that they're driven by a moral imperative. And at the end of the podcast, I'll share my thoughts about why corporations should truly embrace the term family friendly. But first, let's hear a little bit about United Way Suncoast.
Every step forward transforms into something bigger. United Way Suncoast multiplies our community impact, creating powerful outcomes that individuals need to thrive. With every donation, every volunteer hour, and every advocate, United Way Suncoast creates opportunities today, transforms lives tomorrow, and builds a more equitable future for generations to come. United we rise. United we win.
Welcome back. In 2004, the PNC Financial Services Group launched PNC Grow Up Great, a $500 million multi-year bilingual initiative that helps prepare children from birth to age five for success in school and life. To date, the program has supported 8 million children. I'll repeat those numbers, $500 million, 8 million children. Joining us today to share more about PNC Grow Up Great, as well as her own commitment to early learning, is Senior Vice President and Director of Client and Community Relations for Western Central Florida, Diane Jacob. Diane has immersed herself in all aspects of community building during her nearly 40 years in Tampa. She's made a name for herself as a business leader and a servant leader, having served on boards with Leadership Florida and Leadership Tampa, along with 40 other boards. Through PNC Foundation's Grow Up Great, she has focused her community work on early childhood education. Diane Jacob, welcome to the Freedom to Rise podcast.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that introduction. Too kind, really.
No, not at all. We're glad you're here, and soon our audience will learn why it's not too kind. So, Diane, before we talk about early learning, I was told that your community involvement can be traced back as far as 2003, during your days with Hardin Construction, when you helped run Dream Address, a nonprofit that outfitted high school girls who struggled to find affordable prom gowns. You also helped launch Emerge Tampa, a development group for young professionals that still exists today. So my question is, can you tell us why you've always been interested in giving back and how your father inspired your sense of service?
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you asked it that way, because my father had a great deal of influence in my early life, as did my mother for that matter. But several things. My parents were medical missionaries in Korea when I was in the third and fourth grade. So I was old enough to understand the commitment that we made as a family to serve others. That was quite a commitment for him to up his practice and move us all there. And my dad was a dentist, and he did a great deal of pro bono work for children's homes and families in need, and made it a point of his to serve others. My mom was a teacher, so both were interested in making sure their children had a good start in life. My dad, in fact, died while working on a job site for Habitat for Humanity. And he was known in the Habitat circles. He and his surgeon were known to be the best bathroom tilers of the group. You can imagine the precision that went into that work. Nice. And when I started in business, I quickly learned that businesses rely on people and talent to be able to grow. And I made a point to join companies who believed in sharing their profits for the good of the community. And so for the last 40 years that I've lived in Tampa, I found my place here to be able to serve. But Tampa is a wonderful place to open its arms to people coming in from the outside and put them to work. So I took that advantage and did so.
Oh, well, thank you. We're so glad you found your place here. And I would venture that you found many places to be able to serve. So as we mentioned, you're now squarely focused on early learning, and you serve on the board of the Early Learning Coalition of Hillsborough County, also on the board of Champions for Children and the Children's Movement of Florida. Yes. I know that interest is fueled by PNC's commitment, but how has it become woven into your personal DNA?
Well, it's interesting. I mentioned before that my mother was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I learned early on that reading was a fundamental part of being ready for school. And beyond being the fact that it was a natural fit as my role as of the head of community relations for PNC in the region, that was 10 years ago. And I took the business view of the importance of early learning to ensure a qualified workforce. So that business view is a little bit different than the heart view. 70% of employers cite a skills gap in what they need versus what is available in the talent pool. And 20% of the population will retire in the next 10 years, and there's no sizable group to replace them. So it's mm-hmm. become a critical conversation in the growth of Florida and this nation. So in the Florida Chamber's 2030 plan, they quote a two-gap workforce challenge. Too many people lack the skills or credentials necessary to compete for the 21st century jobs, and too many businesses can't find the workers that they need. So both impede our competitiveness on the global economy. And Florida competes on the global economy. Most people don't know that we are the 17th largest economy in the world. Yep. And as a result, we have big issues to talk about in this state. And in the Florida Chamber's 2030 plan, they talk about the necessity to pair a workforce that aligns with the needs of the business community. They and many other organizations are aligned to close the gap by highlighting the need for high-quality child care and early education and advocating for rigorous standards for teachers. But since then, taking that business perspective, I've learned more about brain development through the organizations that I work with and the boards on which I serve. And I believe that early learning is essential to give every child the opportunity to be successful in school and in life. And the future of our country depends on how we address this critical issue going forward. And unfortunately, those children of low and moderate income families are less fortunate in being able to arrive at kindergarten ready to learn. So we have a gap, both in the learning capabilities of children and the opportunities that they have available to them. So there's some statistics too that I think we all need to be aware of. For instance, 85% of a child's brain develops by the time they're three, and yet we don't provide enough resources for parents or teachers to develop those brains at that early stage. Every child is born with 100 million neurons, and unless those pathways are developed early in life, between birth and 3 years old, the brain pairs those away. So it's very difficult to repair those and to reestablish those connections over time. So only slightly more of Florida's children have tested kindergarten ready in recent years. And that's not far off from the national average. So as you can see, that makes it a critical issue. And right now, if I get on my soapbox, 65% of all jobs in America require a post-secondary education. And only 20% of Americans, actually 20% of Americans, read below the level needed to earn a living wage. So you can see the depth of the gap. And then 70% of state prison inmates are high school dropouts. Every high school dropout loses at least $250,000 of lifetime earnings potential. 3/4 of high school students who are poor readers were poor readers in the third grade. And at the third grade level, we test children to be ready to move on because from the first grade through the third grade, they're learning to read. And then from the fourth grade on, you read to learn. So reading skills by the third grade are highly important for a child to move on. So by the time children from low and moderate income families enter kindergarten, They are 12 to 14 months below national norms in language and pre-reading skills. That's a deplorable statistic. By 18 months old, toddlers from disadvantaged families are several months behind more advantaged children in language proficiency, and that furthers the possibility of perpetuating poverty and low and early capacity as adults. You know, what's really interesting to me when you look at that statistic is that it's such an easy thing to solve. We gave parents the proper tools to be able to understand the brain development of a child. It's all about talking to your children. And unfortunately, low and moderate income families are concerned about fundamental things such as the roof over their heads, providing enough income to be able to feed their families, and the security of their families. So it's no fault of their own. It's just a matter of systemic poverty in our country. So the barriers are there and we need to remove them. And then only one half of 3 or 4 year olds are enrolled in a preschool program. If only one half of them are enrolled, we're never going to solve this problem. We need to make this a universal issue in our country. So there are some good news. Thank goodness there's some good
news. Thank goodness there is some good news. Yes.
So participants in early learning programs are 80% more likely to attend college. So if we rectify this situation in a systemic way in the early years, we have the ability to change this country. High-quality early learning education programs increase employability by 23%. And that's another statistic that helps those that need the work the most. Adults who attend early childhood programs in their youth earn 33% higher average child salaries. And that's really good. It's not that difficult to solve that problem as well. So I think in summary of all of those things that I just said, I would tell you that being involved in the world of early childhood education has been one of the most frustrating issues that I have tried to be part of and resolve over the last 10 years. Fortunately, in the last 5 or even in the last 3, there has been greater focus on the need for quality early learning programs. So there is traction.
Absolutely. And you listed so many things. I just let you go on because that was such a thank you. That was such important information. Our audience knows by now, we've been doing this series for a while, that early learning is critical. I'm not sure that we've, as a society, connected it to, it's a workforce issue. It's a thrivability issue as a society and as a community. So I'm so glad that there are individuals like you, not many exactly like you, because you're so involved in community and such a great servant leader, and companies like PNC, who take this seriously and have really doubled down on what they do internally to make sure that your team members feel supported and cared for by their company.
That's right.
So I think some people might be surprised that a bank would be so involved in promoting early learning. Although after what you've just said, maybe the surprise is a little less. Why has PNC chosen to invest so heavily in early learning?
Well, 18 years ago when our PNC Foundation was formed, actually it would have been a couple of years prior to that, we had a focus group that worked on those issues that would be foundational to raising the community standards in any place that we live and work. And in looking at what was foundational to success for families and children, early learning became the most focused area that we could commit our dollars to and see results. None of them would have been immediate results, but long-term focus and being able to sustain that over a period of time, which is why the $500 million was contributed to the foundation by PNC Bank in order to facilitate that cause. So in looking at that being foundational to success in school and life, ways out of poverty, healthy families, all of those issues became the focus of our foundation, along with the arts and along with equity issues in our community. So between all of those 3 things, there's a great synergism between how each of those factors will contribute to the quality of life for families. So we accumulated tools over the last 18 years for providers and families, and they were developed in cooperation with the Sesame Workshop and the Fred Rogers Company. And it includes daily activities and curriculum for teachers. So for the past decade, our local employees have donated thousands of hours, and PNC has invested millions to the cultural arts, quality education programs, and early learning initiatives for children across Florida. And in some cases, we combine the resources of the two other regions in Florida in order to make a greater impact collectively over the state. We're very involved in this. The resources include a 3 T's teaching tools for parents that was developed for children from birth to 3 years of age, with guidelines for meaningful communication between parents and their little ones to ensure brain development in those early years. That was developed with the 3 T's was an initiative of the TMW Center at the University of Illinois. And 3 T's stands for tune in, talk more, and take turns. And the serve and return of that take turns issue works fundamentally with a child's brain in order to get them to feel attached and engaged with family. So that's how we build those neurons in the early years and those pathways so that children's brains are developed and those neurons are not pared away.
Absolutely. That's one thing I learned just from as United Way Suncoast got involved with the campaign for grade level reading, that serve and return, that modeling behavior so that our children begin to see that as well and model that. Thank you very much for that.
I was just going to say, it was interesting to watch that in practice. About 8 years ago, we teamed up with the St. Pete campus of the University of South Florida. And at their YMCA over in one of the communities that I referred to earlier that was low and moderate income families, we created an opportunity for them to do a seminar with those families. And there was a woman there that listened intently through it all. And she had a baby in arms that was probably 6 months old. And she afterwards came up and was talking with me about the program and how much she was enlightened by the information that we gave her and how simple this seemed to be and does it really work. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, her baby was sitting, it was in her arms listening to me. And I turned to her and I started talking about how pretty her dress was and what I loved her shoes and that she was such a pretty little girl. And she started cooing. And her mother says, "I've never seen her do that before." And
I said, "That's so awesome."
That's the response that we're looking for. That's what develops the brain in a baby at that very young age.
Yes. And we, you know, sometimes it can seem overwhelming. It can seem that, well, we have to do this. We have to read X amount. We have to sit down. We have to have the books. We have to, it can be as simple as just having a conversation with your child frequently.
That's right.
Just looking them in the eye and having, and sharing words or sharing a laugh or whatever. So yes, thank you for that. No, go ahead.
My favorite thing when my son was young was to go to the grocery store with him. And we would walk down the aisles and look for pictures of things. And I'd ask him to find animals. And I'd ask him to look for colors. And the grocery store is a perfect place to learn all of those things that you need for kindergarten with shapes and colors and sizes and all of those kinds of things. So use the grocery store.
Use the grocery store. Use driving in the car, although keep your eyes on the road.
Exactly.
When you see signs, you can just read those off. But really, I just do with my own grandbabies, because I got the opportunity to talk about my grandbabies now on the podcast again. I just talk to them.
That's right.
Say things, tell them little stories, even if the story doesn't make perfect sense. Using as many words as possible.
That's
and
right.
Trying to come up with some ideas that they may not have heard yet. Since they're only almost two and just born,
wonderful.
A lot of ideas.
You can have a great impact in their lives.
Thank you very much. I certainly hope so. I'm learning a lot every day. So one of the things that I had a chance to watch the Grow Up Great webinar, and I encourage anybody who's listening to take a moment to watch that. But one of the things that I just grew more and more impressed with PNC as I listened and learned is to be ideal employees, we need to accept that them for their full selves. We need to accept one another for what everybody brings to the table. It's not always 100% focused on the job. There are other things in our lives that take our attention. And so they listed some things that can be successful. When a company invests in their employees by offering a living wage, flexibility on the job, childcare or backup childcare, which I think is very cool, and parental leave. Those are some things that PNC, I just thought it was important for our audience to know that PNC invests in that way. So tell us more about that and why PNC takes such a strong stance and how it's been successful for you.
Well, it's interesting that you've done good research looking at what we do as a family-friendly company. We've been recognized by the Thrive by Five panelists at their highest platinum level because of our policies for families. And several PNC regional presidents are Bosses for Babies representatives by the Children Movement.
Oh, great.
Which is, it's designed to engage business leaders in boosting their workforce and their contribution to the community through family-focused practices. So you mentioned paid parental leave and flexible working arrangements, and job sharing is another one of those, and hybrid working conditions. You know, you and I didn't have a lot of choices. We either worked or we didn't work when our kids were young.
So true.
But job sharing allows for some of that flexibility and allows for a woman or a man, depending upon who's taking on the primary family responsibilities, to be able to stay in the workforce without leaving it completely. And in this day and time, workforce is a big issue for every company. Finding qualified workers, you don't want to have them leave you for reasons that can be solved. And the pandemic's done us a favor in that respect with the hybrid working conditions. It gives greater flexibility to families as well. But we adopted these practices a long time ago. And the reason we did was it allowed our employees to balance their work commitments with their family responsibilities, obviously. But they also support employees to meet both professional and personal commitments. And when working parents are supported, employers reap the benefits. There's no question about that. The employee has increased loyalty and productivity. There's decreased turnover cost, and we can attract and retain the best talent and see the results in the bottom line. So family-focused practices decrease employee stress and enhance wellness issues. And when you're dealing with your own employees' health and safety, you want to be sure that they're supported emotionally as well. And that's a big part of the stress that certainly family members face. And then in giving back in support of early learning, we're able to contribute a greater kindergarten readiness rate that translates into a better life for the outcomes of children and everyone in the community, including our own employees.
Absolutely. And sometimes it may not be easy for businesses to get to that point of, you know, how do we invest? What's the right thing to do? And maybe make that connection to long-term thrivability for their business and ultimately for our community. One of the things that Dana Susskind, you referred to her before, or the TMW Center for Early Learning before, she's the author of Parent Nation. And she talks about collective identity. And all of us are allies. The way she defines it is all of us are allies, loving our children. None of us parent alone. We need to understand the invisible labor that allows us to do what we do. So some of that invisible labor, I interpreted some of that to being what businesses are able to do because their team members are taking on some things that they may just not be aware of. And I just feel as a PNC in what I have heard so far and learned so far is a leader in making sure that our families and our caregivers, they're quick to define it's caregivers overall, and that's all of us in the end. And they seem to have identified some of the core things that are needed. Why should other businesses get involved?
Well, that's a very good question. And before I get into that, I'd like to give you kind of an anecdotal reference. My husband and I were in Japan a few years ago, and having childcare and a child in the Japanese culture is the responsibility of the entire community. And the way in which the family structure is generally grandparents live with families with younger children, and grandmothers tend to be kind of the oversight of the young children. So early in the morning, mom and dad are off to work. And not long after that, children are going to school. 3 and 4 year olds will go out the family gate. And usually there's a gated homestead. And the grandmothers are all looking out of the gate in unison as every child goes down the street, and they grab the next child that's going along, and hand in hand, they walk down the street, 3 and 4 year olds by themselves, and they get on public transit and go to school. What? And they get off that transit, and everybody is watching them. The bus driver knows to tell them to get off in case they've forgotten it's their stop. They get off, and everybody where they get off watches them until they get into the schoolyard. And they've been doing this for a very long time. And it works. It works. We don't take that kind of responsibility for our own children. So back to your question, if you would say that one again.
Oh, so my question again is, I went through just kind of that collective identity and having us all be allies and understanding the importance of giving our team members. I may be rewording it differently, but it's okay. Because the concept is there is the thought of giving our team members grace.
Yes.
Understanding that not every day is going to be exactly the same day, and not every work day is exactly the same day. And home life can be difficult. It can be challenging, but can also be incredibly rewarding. And when we know that our colleagues want to be home with whoever they're, the caregiver for, I think giving them grace for that is one of those things that PNC talked about a lot in that particular webinar. So why should other businesses do that?
Well, I can tell you from a productivity standpoint, year over year for the last 10 years in our region, we have excelled beyond the previous year. And it's not a small amount. It's by a very large amount. But we do give our employees that kind of grace, that understanding that families are important. A lot of our team members in the West and Central Florida region are very young, taking on leadership roles as heads of departments in their 30s, which is a wonderful thing to see. It's new energy. We're developing our next leadership rung, because as we know, 20% of the workforce could retire in the next 10 years and probably will.
It's coming.
And we need to develop that talent coming behind it. So they all have young families. And unless we address the issues that they deal with, then we have created animosity within the workplace. There's tension, there's stress. I have to go see my kid in a play. And how am I going to do that without causing problems? We're not in the decades that you and I started out, in which if you left the office, you weren't working.
Right.
That's not the way it is anymore. Thank God for technology that it isn't. But we had to change that mindset too. And by so doing, our employees are loyal. In PNC's employees, we have a club we call the Quarter Century Club, which is anybody that's worked in the company for 25 years or more. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people in that group. And it's because PNC takes care of us. I mean, we bring our whole selves to work, like you said, and our whole selves might include our family issues, but it also might include our ethnicities and choosing who we love and all of those other personal issues that you can't divorce yourself from when you come to the workplace.
And you shouldn't.
And when people are accepted for that, then they're far more productive because they're not worrying about how they're presenting themselves or what they're trying to hide or what makes them uncomfortable. So those family-friendly policies and bringing your whole self to work truly contribute to our ability to grow our business.
Absolutely. Well, if that's not an advertisement to other businesses on how to do it right, then I don't know what is. And I know it was not intended as an advertisement. So, given your various roles and your definitely, you know, just thorough knowledge about early learning, what do you see as Florida's largest early learning needs? What are the most important ones on your radar?
Well, that's a great question. So the biggest issue, better wages for early learning teachers, hands down. That's without a doubt. Early learning teachers earn an average of $12 per hour. And we all know that's not a living wage. And during the pandemic, we had essential workers that needed safe places to place their children because they were working. Mm-hmm. While the rest of us were working from home, they were doing their jobs. And many, many of them had children. So about one third of all the early learning centers closed during that period of time, and many have not reopened. But I can tell you that the business model doesn't work. So imagine this, if teachers were to be paid comparable wages to K-12 teachers, the cost of childcare would have to go up and parents would not be able to afford the quality early learning that they need. And it must be subsidized if we are especially able to provide the same quality learning experience for all children, especially those of low and moderate income children, which is the group we're talking about that is essentially not kindergarten ready. So the model doesn't work. And then there's quality versus access. Florida rates pretty highly when it comes to access, but very low when it comes to quality. So just providing daycare doesn't move the needle. Quality instruction is essential for children to be ready for school. And then supporting families with family-friendly policies, that we've talked about that already, but the power for companies to bring those issues to the legislation so that the needs of children are met, that certainly is something that companies can do. Then exposure to local organizations through board placements. As you mentioned, I serve on several boards associated with early learning issues. But each of those organizations addresses early learning as a fundamental to various aspects, ensuring a safe and successful life for a child. For instance, Champions for Children was previously known as the Child Abuse Council, and it's changed its name in recent years to address the needs of the family more broadly. And it sees the correlation between parenting, early learning, parent-child attachment as key to breaking the cycle of child abuse. And then the children's movement takes a very broad approach by engaging businesses in that advocacy proponent needed to improve the funding and support for quality child care with the legislature and congressmen. The Early Learning Coalition is specifically chartered to channel the state and federal funding to subsidize childcare for low and moderate income families in Tampa. And that's through the providers in the community. And then they monitor the standards set by the state. We need to raise those standards so that it is a more effective quality environment that we're putting our children in. So those are basic things that are needed right now.
And doable.
Yes, they all are.
They're very doable. They're actionable. We can do that tomorrow. Just get that started. So thank you very much for sharing. And this has been a delightful conversation, and I could go on, but I want to make sure that you have the time that you need and I have the time that I need since we talk about work-life balance. But I'm so glad you joined us. Are there any final thoughts you want to share with our audience before we move on?
Well, as much as PNC looks at the whole person coming to the workforce, we look at the whole community too. You can't ignore those factors in the community that are holding people back from being prosperous. And as all companies know, having a prosperous community means that our ability to grow our businesses is much better. And so we've made some commitments to the communities that we live and work in, and we're in all 30 of the top markets in this country after the acquisition of the BBVA US operations in the last 2 years. And in that acquisition, we looked at introducing those things that would remove the barriers for creating wealth for families. And especially after the systemic racism issues that were brought up in the last couple of years, our commitment to reducing the negative aspects of overdraft and accounts and that sort of thing, created a product we call low cash mode. And low cash mode basically gives you a 24-hour period in which to remove something that would make your account overdraw. So it's a good opportunity to keep those fees from going up. And then we have sent more than 10 million alerts to our clients in that time frame to allow them not to be in that low cash mode, so to speak, and remove those barriers. And then we put $88 million into a campaign and into the products and services to provide loans to small businesses, especially those brown and black communities, so that we can raise their ability to create wealth within their own communities. And we're in the process of rolling out those resources now over the next several years. So our commitment is not just to our employees. Our commitment is to all the people we serve. So it's been the most rewarding of all the jobs I've had over the years, just because I know that what I do can make a collective impact in the community. So I know that sounds a lot like a commercial, but I'm very proud of what we've done and very glad to be part of that.
And if it's a commercial, then is PNC hiring? You know, so yes. Anybody in our community who might be interested, but I've learned so much that it is just, I think it's empowering for your team. I think it's empowering for our community, and it's empowering for business to know that a company can take such a strong leadership stance and thrive.
Yes.
And their team members can thrive. What did you say? The quarter century club with hundreds of folks that are in it? That's pretty, or you might have said hundreds of thousands, but
well, actually, it's probably we have 62,000 employees, and there's, I would guess at this point, there's thousands of people that are
thousands of people. See, we want to get that right because that's important to show that a business can take that strong of a stance and actually implement some things that address the details of life,
right?
And still do very well. So, thank you so much, Diane. I'm so glad you were on the podcast.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yes. All right, everybody. So now it's time for the big takeaway. United Way believes that everybody deserves equitable access to opportunities to create the life they imagine. The absence of childcare has dramatically impacted the U.S. labor force. Women, in particular, have dropped out of the workplace at a higher rate than men due to pandemic-related issues, which include child care center closures. Companies must pay greater attention to these issues. The Great Resignation threatens the thrivability of our families, which impacts the bottom line. But as PNC leaders will tell you, they embrace policies that promote families, not just to boost revenue, but because it's the right thing to do. For so many businesses, paid parental leave, paying a living wage, and supporting high-quality childcare should be about more than generating profits, although all of these will. PNC has set a standard, but it's a standard that more companies should meet. Managers need to make allowances for the demands of childcare. Bosses need to give grace for workers dealing with a sick child as often as they give praise for a job well done. It should be about creating what pediatric surgeon and social scientist Dana Susskind calls creating a parent nation, a society that supports parents and caregivers because we're all parents and caregivers in the broadest sense. Susskind says we need to be allies in helping moms and dads because no one parents alone. At United Way Suncoast, we recognize the value of creating a community of support, especially for our Alice families. We invite companies to learn more about ways they can help all children and support caregivers. Together, we can promote the physical and emotional well-being of parents and their children. Because united we rise, united we win. Onward.